All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Tuesday. Coming up this hour, Congressman Mark Pocan talks about his recent trip to Cuba and the give and take that's going to be needed before relations can make a post-Trump turnaround between our two countries. He will also share his take on how congressional Republicans plan to fight it out on the House floor later today to see who becomes the next Speaker of the House. Maybe today. Maybe not today. We'll see. To reach us, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Our phone number, the main studio line for us and all the Civic Media shows, is 844-967-2789. And if you want to call us on the Up North line, 715-388-7155. You can follow us all day long on social media at upnorthnewswi.com or look for Up North News WI on your social media feeds as my colleagues ramp back into action for the start of a new calendar year and a new hearing or new session rather of the legislature, a new session of Congress, and continue to follow the things that are going to affect you throughout the coming year. There isn't really much of an update on Damar Hamlin, the 24-year-old player for the Buffalo Bills, who remains in critical condition after suffering a cardiac arrest during the Monday Night Football game in Cincinnati. Hamlin's heart stopped after he was hit hard on a play in the first quarter. His heartbeat was restored by medical personnel on the field. He was then taken to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center, has been sedated, and is undergoing further testing and treatment. It was about 9 minutes into the game when Hamlin tackled Bengals receiver T. Higgins after a catch. Higgins rammed into Hamlin at full speed, appearing to hit him in the head and chest area. Hamlin quickly stood up, took a couple of steps, and then collapsed backward and went limp. CPR was administered on the field for about 10 minutes before he was taken away in an ambulance. Players on both teams visibly upset, some shedding tears on the sidelines. For a time, the NFL had wanted to get the game restarted, but players ultimately decided they could not go on, went to the locker room, and the game was indefinitely suspended. It does have some ramifications for the playoff seedings, but at this point, it's more important to remember that, you know, this is a game. It's just a game compared to the traumatic event that happened to a young man in good health. So we're going to wait and see what happens with him before the NFL makes any further decisions on the game. Meanwhile, over on the NFC side of things, the Green Bay Packers are still in the hunt for a playoff spot. I can't believe I'm saying that. The team that was once 4-8 is now 8-8 and just needs to defeat the Detroit Lions. If they win, they're in. If they lose, they're out. It's not up to any other team besides them. And game time for the Packers has now been set. Packers and Lions will play the Sunday night game. So anybody with tickets to Lambeau Field that had been hoping or assuming that they'd get a noon game or a 3:25 game, that's not happening. The game now starts at 7:20 on Sunday night, January 8th. So I guess we're just going to have to alter your plans accordingly for that as we get to the end of the NFL season and the potential for the Packers to carry on. We were talking before the last break, at the end of the last hour, about gaming and about files. We actually started talking about, you know, the digital music files and whether you could access certain songs or not. And Aaron Zomers here, our producer, introduced a new wrinkle to that debate, and that is the digital files for games. I mean, it's one thing if you've got an old board game. Let's say Parker Brothers stopped making Monopoly, which isn't going to happen. But if they did, you know, you'd still have the board somewhere in a closet and you could play it at some point. But Aaron, you're saying that some of these game makers, when they discontinue games, if the digital files go away, you might not ever be able to access that game again.
Yeah. If we're talking about physical media with a board game, if your pieces are broken, you can probably make something that'll do. But if your old disc is too scratched up, that just sucks. But if you bought games digitally from, let's say, the Nintendo eShop on 3DS or Wii U, those are pretty recent, so we're not talking old discs or cartridges failing. We're just talking the Nintendo eShop being closed down in, I believe, March. So a lot of those games are just going to disappear. If you've bought it already, you won't be able to re-download it anymore necessarily. And they've been cracking down pretty hard on the files being available elsewhere, which makes sense, except if you also are not letting people buy them or download them, then they're just going to disappear.
The whole thing about media, I find fascinating, electronic digital media, or even the physical media. For example, I have movies still on VHS and on DVD, but I don't have a VHS player anymore, and I'm not even sure if the DVD player works properly. But then if you've bought something digitally, like let's say Elon Musk took over Apple tomorrow and completely ruined that company the way that he's ruining Twitter, what happens to all that music that you've purchased, but you've never put onto a CD or some other physical media? Do you just lose it? Even though the company says you'll own that song forever, you'll own that movie forever, you'll own that game forever.
Well,
I guess everything is as tenuous as a piece that could break on your Monopoly board.
Yeah. You're going to have to go through and read the iTunes Terms of Service Agreement if you really want to know what happens.
Oh, please. Like, I've got 6 months to sit and read that thing, which is how long it would take to go through all of that. Let's take a break, come back to some other Wisconsin news and headlines, including Wisconsin Republicans in the news again because of the insurrection on January 6, 2021. This is Up North News Radio. Talking about Wisconsin Republicans and the clown car conspiracy that nearly toppled American democracy at the end of the 2020 election. That's coming up in a moment. First on Up North News Radio, we're going to tie a bow on our discussion about games, because as Aaron and I were talking about digital games, I was talking about old-fashioned board games. I've been asked by a group to help them as they map out new fundraising activities. And they know that for quite a long time, I was a member of a group called Literacy Volunteers. It's now called Literacy Chippewa Valley. And during that time, I and a couple of other people came up with the idea of using the board game Scrabble, and basically a variation of Scrabble. And we started a Scrabble-type tournament that went from barely breaking even the first year to raising $40,000 a year for literacy efforts in the Chippewa Valley. Well, then when I moved to the Caribbean in 2014, it turns out that Literacy Volunteers has a chapter there, and the Literacy Volunteers chapter in the Cayman Islands has now been running a Scrabble-based tournament for, 8 years now, raising money for them. So I've been very happy to see that take place. Well, like I said, there's another group now, relatively new. They're looking to set up a signature fundraiser event. And, you know, as you would know, Aaron, there's no shortage of ways that you could do a fundraiser. You could have, a craft show. You could have a chili cook-off. You could have a concert. You could do a 5K. You could do a golf outing.
You could go door-to-door selling popcorn or cookies.
You could go door-to-door selling popcorn. Yeah, maybe through Robin Voss's popcorn company. I don't know. Anyway, so we divided all of this up, and because of the work that I'd done with, a Scrabble-based game, they asked if I would look into other types of games that could be played as part of a fundraiser event. And, I immediately thought of something like, different groups have, say, cribbage tournaments or other things involving cards. I looked into other games. You certainly wouldn't want to do a Monopoly tournament because it would take too long. And frankly, too many people end up fighting about the rules of Monopoly, believe it or not.
Yeah, I imagine you probably want people to come back the next year.
I do. I don't want them throwing the game pieces, at each other or anything like that. There's Farkle there, what's the one I was telling you I was reading about? I've never played it. Catan.
Yeah. Settlers of Catan. It's a pretty good one for stuff like that.
A card game there. So yeah, I was just asking you about different board games or card games or things that might make for a good tournament setting that this group might want to consider. So anybody has some thoughts on that, send us a note, radio@upnorthnewswi.com, or give the studio a call.
Yeah. Besides those ones, which Catan is definitely good because it is a game a lot of people like, it's fairly well known. It's no Monopoly, but it's getting up there. But a couple others would be Azul, which is two to four player game where you use little plastic tiles that represent like porcelain tiles to make a wall following a certain pattern, and you're like stealing tiles from each other and stuff like that. Takes about 20-30 minutes, so it's not too long. That one's fun, as well as Ticket to Ride is another one that's pretty popular now, where you are competing to make train tracks across the U.S. or other countries. You get cards with goals, like, oh, you need to make a track from Houston to New York, and then if you complete it, you get a bunch of points. If you don't, you lose those points. And then you also get points for things like the longest railroad across the country.
Boy, wouldn't that be nice to have a railroad, you know, taking people across Wisconsin again? Maybe that's the game we could play here.
Yeah, now we are talking about board games, and I feel like that's a little bit unrealistic, even for a board
game. Yeah, that's more fantasy games when you're talking about the legislature and the Republicans there. But speaking of Republicans, let's get back to the January 6th committee, because even though its work is now completed, even though it shouldn't be, but with Republicans taking over the House, the committee wrapped up its work before it could be disbanded and released more evidence of how many people were in on the conspiracy to try to overthrow an American election and to allow Donald Trump to essentially seize power by not giving up the presidency, even though he had lost. And so many different text message exchanges have been released by the committee leading up to the election, post-election, and then in and around the insurrection as well. And in one, there's an exchange between Utah Senator Mike Lee and Cleta Mitchell of Wisconsin, an attorney who was one of the leading planners of the effort to overturn the 2020 election. And there's a text exchange where they get into whether Ron Johnson should play a role and to what extent. And it's clear that one of them does not think much of Ron Johnson's ability to grasp the ideas behind the plot to change the election results. Keep in mind that it's not that Ron Johnson would have been opposed to that. He has said publicly that he would like to see the Republicans in the legislature essentially seize control of federal elections in Wisconsin, rather than having the bipartisan Wisconsin Elections Commission work on administering the elections. So I got to blow this up because I didn't bring my readers here, but here we go. We've got Cleta Mitchell, the attorney, talking to Senator Mike Lee, basically looking for Congress to find a way to have an excuse to hold hearings. This is immediately after the election, to claim that there were irregularities. Again, there wasn't any evidence of it. Remember how Trump said to the Georgia Secretary of State, you know, I need you to find me these votes. And he said to, you know, somebody else in the Justice Department, you don't have to have evidence, just say that you think there are irregularities and leave the rest to me and the Republicans in Congress. And that's what Cleta Mitchell, the attorney, was doing with Utah Senator Mike Lee in this exchange, asking, is there a way the Senate can conduct a hearing to allow me to present the election contest in Georgia? Can we make that record? The Georgia judiciary has not appointed a judge to hear our case. And so she's saying in so many words, you know, so we want Congress to, you know, take over that role. And Mike Lee says, you know, let me look into it. But he calls it a dangerous idea to invite all of the senators to essentially a manufactured crisis. Lee notes that it's dangerous not just for the Republic itself, but for the president. Cleta Mitchell saying, well, that's why I want to do a hearing a day or two before January 6th. Mike Lee says the most natural fit might be the Homeland Security Committee. May I pitch it to Ron Johnson, who was the chair of the Homeland Security Committee at the time, as well as Lindsey Graham? And Mike Lee goes on to say, honestly, I think I could pull this off if I could pitch it as a way to avoid the January 6th plan. Tell me if you think I'm wrong on this, Mike Lee says, but I don't think we have any valid basis for objecting to the electors. Well, Cleta Mitchell goes on to state that there is valid reason to want to overrule the electors from, you know, Georgia and other states. Mike Lee is suspicious at best. And then, the part that folks are talking about is Cleta Mitchell really wanting Lindsey Graham, a Trump sycophant, to run this through his committee rather than Ron Johnson through the Homeland Security Committee, because Cleta Mitchell says, quote, "I don't think Ron Johnson can master these concepts. I think this should be the committee of the whole ultimately, but I'll start with the Judiciary Committee," she says, rather than the Homeland Security Committee. This doesn't just involve, you know, Cleta Mitchell, a leading attorney from Wisconsin, but it involves the fake electors plot, of which former state Republican Party chair Andrew Hitt was among those fake electors. And he also understood that Ron Johnson was fighting for the ability to have the Wisconsin legislature choose the electors rather than the will of the voters. In one text released by the January 6th committee, state Republican Party chair Andrew Hitt references a guy named Ron. The text says, "Ron called me and is now arguing for us to have the legislature choose the electors. OMG. And when somebody responds, "What is he doing?" Andrew Hitt says, "There is a huge amount of pressure building on them to find a way around the Electoral College," from which the response comes, "How can he feel good about promoting that, though? Does he believe we won here?" And Andrew Hitt's response is, "I feel like he believes whoever he talked to last." A rather damning indictment of Ron Johnson in that text, as well as the one from Cleta Mitchell ahead of time. And in testimony with Andrew Hitt in his testimony before the January 6th committee, he again made clear that Ron Johnson has told him, "We need to have our legislature choose the electors." And he said this before the meeting of fake electors in the Wisconsin state capitol. So again, we have more than enough evidence that links the then chair of the state Republican Party and the Republican U.S. Senator from Wisconsin to this plan that would overrule the will of the voters. I think a lot of people assumed in the last days of, you know, January 2021, in the aftermath of January 6th, that you would have Republicans calling as well as Democrats for there to be consequences for those who would do something like this, who would make this kind of a plot that would lead to the kind of deadly violence that we saw on January 6th. Instead, Ron Johnson was able to win re-election thanks to some overtly racist ads that billionaires helped pay for. And you have Republicans taking over the House starting today with members that include Derek Van Orden from the 3rd District, a member of that mob on January 6th, who says he did not go into the Capitol, that he left when it looked like things were turning violent. But we know he was on the Capitol grounds that day. We know he used campaign funds to travel to Washington, D.C. to take part in the protest that Trump was calling for. Trump knew about the potential for violence, and these new text messages show that other people were extremely concerned about the violence potential. They were concerned about what it looks like to try to overturn or get around the Electoral College. And yet here they are, controlling Congress now. And coming up after this break, we're going to talk to Congressman Mark Pocan. He is going to talk about the start of the new Congress and the struggles by the GOP to choose someone to be Speaker of the House. Pocan also recently traveled to Cuba, and he'll talk to us about the things that both Havana and Washington have to change before relations between the two countries can turn positive again. We'll have all of that coming up with Congressman Mark Pocan after this break on Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
We're back now on Up North News Radio with Congressman Mark Pocan as we look ahead to the 2023 session of Congress, a little different than what we've had the past couple of years. Congressman, good to see you. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Pat. Appreciate it.
Before we get into that, though, I'd like to come to a trip that you took recently to Cuba with a couple of other colleagues to talk about the situation there, how things have changed over the past couple of years, especially because of actions by the Trump administration, but also actions by the Cuban government against protesters there. So all in all, tell me about the thrust of the visit and whether you think it's going to lead to some better relations and better conditions with Cuba.
So the conditions are about as bad as they've been probably since the early 90s in Cuba economically. Long lines for food, not a lot of things on shelves. Gas lines very, very long, largely because of the not just the embargo, but Donald Trump on his way out declared Cuba to be on the list of state sponsors of terrorism. So the only other three countries on that list are Iran, Syria, and North Korea, all of which there are valid reasons to be on there. And then there's a reason called Florida that is why right. Cuba is on there by Donald Trump as he left. And you may remember during the Obama administration, things warmed up considerably and the economic conditions were a lot better for the Cuban people. And, you know, it's one of our closest neighbors, literally 80, 90 miles off of the Florida border. And so we went down, one, to see the conditions, two, to talk to a number of folks, including some entrepreneurs. They have a new law that now allows entrepreneurial ventures. The problem is, with the U.S. sanctions, it's pretty hard to be an entrepreneur, and we're probably not teaching the 101s of what business is because of that. But most importantly, we wanted to try to talk about getting the U.S. off that list, trying to work towards getting rid of the embargo, getting back to the point we were with the Obama administration, the Obama-Biden administration, I might add, from where President Trump made the changes. But also to talk to them about on July 11th of 2021, they had some civil unrest. People were in the streets over not having anything in the condition in the stores. Part of this is due to COVID, but most of it is due to the U.S. policies. And out of it, the Cuban government overreacted and put somewhere between 700 and 1,200 people in prison for, you know, 10, 20, and 30-year sentences, really, for civil disobedience. There was some violence and things destroyed, but it was largely civil disobedience. And, you know, they try to compare it to our January 6th, which, you know, we told them didn't really compare. But also, as you know, most people have gotten four-month, year-and-a-half sentences for January 6th actions, not exactly 10, 20, and 30-year sentences. So what we're trying to express is, look, you know, people who care about the human rights of the Cuban people, who want to see this embargo lifted, who want to see the state sponsor of terror designation lifted, also care about political prisoners, and that we need them to realize that as much as we're going to pressure the U.S. government to go back to where we were under Barack Obama, we also need them to recognize some issues that we have concerns with.
We're talking with Congressman Mark Pocan. We're now going to turn our attention to the session that lies ahead of us. one in which Republicans will take control of the House by a very slim majority. And even as we record this interview, the Republican caucus remains in a state of chaos over the condition of its leadership. And Congressman, I'm not trying to be flippant here, but I wonder if that's just going to be the constant state of that caucus even after the session begins.
You're just being accurate. You know, I've told people invest in popcorn futures for January 3rd because it could be a very good show. Yeah, I don't quite see how Kevin McCarthy becomes speaker. You know, there's 30 people, I think, who've said publicly they won't vote for him. Most of them will cave. But, you know, you only have a 5-seat majority with some true nutty extremists in that caucus. And because of that, you know, he's going to either have to acquiesce to demands like, you know, they can remove him, make a motion to remove him at any time, or other things that no leader would reasonably do. Or, you know, I think there's a fairly good chance that, you know, the number two person, Steve Scalise, who's more conservative than Kevin McCarthy, has a better chance potentially if they can't get it done. Kevin McCarthy's real problem is he believes in nothing other than Kevin McCarthy having a title. And he doesn't come from any of the various caucuses within the Republican Party, which means he has no allies within the Republican Party. And, you know, at a time that they have, you know, very extreme parts of their caucus, like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert, Chip Roy, Jim Jordan, and many others, it's difficult for anyone to try to navigate that system.
At some point, when the session gets going, though, we heard so much during the election campaign about inflation and how this global phenomena was somehow Joe Biden's fault and that something needed to be done. So I ask in all seriousness, do you expect there to be a real plan to help fight inflation from the Republicans when this session gets going?
Their plan will be basically to do oversight hearings in many committees, because that's all they can do. They probably can't pass much on the floor. So you will hear Hunter Biden so much that, you know, for those of us in Wisconsin, please don't drink when you hear his name because it will be dangerous to your health. You know, that is what we think they're going to do, is just take on these little fringe issues. They're going to go after the head of Homeland Security. They're going to go after some of their pet projects and try to, you know, blame it on Democrats and Joe Biden. But legislatively, they're going to not be able to do much of anything. And don't forget, the Senate still is in Democratic hands, and we still have the White House, and any bill could be vetoed. So their governing potential is at about 0.1%. Their ability to get press will be at a full, you know, 95 to 100%.
You'll be working, as often happens in the minority, you'll be working a lot on constituent services and the things that, you know, a member of the minority can continue to do. Ron Johnson's going to be in the minority in the Senate, and the thing that he said he's going to do is basically help the House Republicans in their investigations of things like Hunter Biden and whatever else they think they're going to investigate. My question for you is, are you concerned that you and others are going to have to spend a disproportionate amount of time knocking down misinformation and otherwise responding to what's going to come ahead because there just isn't going to be as much legislative action to work on?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be what you're going to see out of this Congress, is just, you know, because they can't put bills out. Again, they're going to do these hearings. Democrats will fight back against the lies that come out. Ron Johnson will apparently think he's Glenn Grothman, because I believe he lives in Glenn Grothman's district, and try to be a House Republican. Hopefully someone will give him a box of crayons that will occupy his time better. But, you know, that is the reality of the next session. Now, one caveat is, you know, I'm a little spoiled on this scenario because I serve on the Appropriations Committee, and we're a committee that largely works together. And even when Republicans are in charge, I can still bring some things home to Wisconsin. And to the Republicans' credit, they voted to keep earmarks, something that's important to bring money back to Wisconsin. So, you know, I will have a little bit of responsibility still, but it is different. You know, there's no question when you go from the majority to the minority. And, you know, when Ron Johnson is, you remember how much he relished in that role before, when he explained to us how mouthwash could kill COVID, how you could get AIDS from the vaccine for COVID. Like, you know, he loves fringe theories. And in fact, he loves them so much that you may remember this, and it didn't get out in election a lot, but the intelligence folks came to him and said, you are repeating Russian media talking points. And he doesn't realize it, but he is being manipulated by Russia often when he says some of these dumb things. But he is our senator.
You're a leading member of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And again, while in the minority, that is a group of people who have never been shy about talking about what Congress should be working on. So as you've talked to members of the Progressive Caucus, what will be the bulk of the messaging done by you and the colleagues there to folks back home, but perhaps even more importantly, to folks who live in Republican districts?
You know, I think the Democratic caucus and the Progressive caucus are going to be very much hand in hand talking about what happens in 2024 when you elect Democrats again. Those are issues like Social Security. We have to get a grip on Social Security. And as you know, from the last fall campaign, Ron Johnson wants to put it on the chopping block every year. The Republican Study Committee wants to put it on the chopping block every 5 years. It's your money that you pay in through your check. We want to make sure that program's here in the future. And I think that's one of the issues we'll be putting forward, as well as a lot of other things to show what can happen should you get Democrats back in charge. You know, the childcare subsidies that didn't happen in Build Back Better are still very much a priority, that no one would pay more than 7% of their income on childcare. That's a game changer for families in Wisconsin. You know, you literally would have thousands of dollars more a year in your pocket to support your families, and you'd help get more people into the workplace doing that. So there's a lot of things that we're going to be pushing to show the contrast. They're going to want to talk about Hunter Biden and other conspiracy theories. We're going to talk about things that actually help someone living in Wisconsin, you know, just getting by day to day and trying to take care of their family.
On the whole, then, as the Republicans take over, and it means in one large area, the work of the January 6th committee, all but ends. But looking at it, did that in fact have value, even if it does have to be essentially disbanded when more work certainly could be done?
Well, there's always value to having the truth out there, right? And I think the truth got out quite well with the January 6th committee, and now they've made criminal referrals, and the Department of Justice will continue to do their work, right? One thing I know from watching the federal government, Pat, from going from local to state where you and I served to federal, is, you know, every level of government works slower. The federal government is exponentially slower. I think sloths watch us and wonder why we're moving so slowly. So Department of Justice will still do their work. We got a lot of the information for them through the January 6th committee. And even though the Republicans will probably go after the committee, I think that's going to be one of their investigations. Fine. The truth is out there. People saw it with their own eyes. Whether or not they choose to believe their eyes is their own decision.
I know it's been a while since you and I both were in the legislature, but I can't resist asking the question about a state with a $6.6 billion budget surplus. And if you were back in the legislature, I would be asking you, isn't there any way to come up with a win-win out of this between Democrats and Republicans? You see Wisconsin politics enough to know. Do you have any reason as an outsider now to be optimistic that the state legislature and the governor can actually do something together on such a massive amount of money that's available to invest in the state?
You know, the gerrymandered legislature has shown little interest in working with the governor. So that's been the problem, right? We saw that with our own eyes over the last several years. But as you know, when I was actually chair of the Finance Committee, we had about the same amount of a deficit. And we got some federal monies at the time because of the economic conditions in 2008. We raised a couple billion in revenue, and we cut about $2.5 billion in programs. I would think right now the governor clearly is an education governor. He came from Department of Public Instruction. That's his background. He wants to put money into that. That shouldn't be a political partisan issue, but it is becoming that. I'm guessing that some additional monies will get there somehow. What the trade-off for that is and some other issues, I don't quite know. But I do feel strongly that the governor will have some ability to prevail, because he can continue to veto their bills. They don't have a majority enough to override those, and they're going to have to work with him unless, you know, they just want to continue the Republican show that's been going on.
Always appreciate the observations and the insight. Congressman Mark Pocan, you've been very generous with your time. Thank you so much for visiting with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Pat. Appreciate it.
Now, tomorrow, we're going to have a couple of guests. Sarah Godlewski, the about-to-be former state treasurer, is going to visit with us. It'll be the first of what I believe are going to be several visits that I'm greatly looking forward to, as she helps highlight and lift up the voices of Wisconsin women performing public service all across the state. We're also going to talk to Pastor Ned Lenhart, kind of on an offshoot of what you could be doing in place of New Year's resolutions. And then Thursday, we have Hometown Health with Kristen Lyerly. Back with Chad Holmes after this. You're up north. Again, tomorrow on the show, Sarah Godlewski. She's also going to tell us about the right-wing group Moms for Liberty that is trying to take over school boards across Wisconsin. On Thursday, we will discuss crisis pregnancy centers, which, again, tried to build themselves as a medical alternative to traditional clinics, but are leaving out some vital information. So we have a busy couple of days coming up ahead of us. And then there's Chad Holmes, who's busy every day, even when he's not supposed to be, on weekends and evenings and holidays, who does it all for Bull Falls Radio, Civic Media, and much more. I asked before, Chad, how are your holidays? Were you aware that there were holidays, or did you you just work straight through them until somebody tells you to stop and go to sleep?
Calendar and days, they have very little meaning to me.
I sense an intervention might be needed at some point here. I get tired, Chad, just looking at your Twitter feed, at everything that you're covering. I mean, you're covering this game here, and then this high school game over there, and then here's a talk show about the games, and then here's your afternoon talk show on Bull Falls Radio and other outlets. You got to take it easy there, man. I'm a little worried about you.
We can rest when I'm 90. That's my goal. I got to stick around till I'm 90.
Here's
so I got
the a little thing. Time left. You got to make it to 90 first. we have concerns, you know, let's put it that way. But look, again, we are so fortunate to have you keeping local events and things in the scene. But you do talk local news and politics, you know, 2 to 4 afternoons on several of our civic media stations. And tell us about some of the things you've been talking about over the holidays, or the things you're looking forward to chatting about.
Well, I'm curious about 2023. I think it really is a time to turn the page. And I found it interesting, again, the connection between what's going on in Madison and what happens locally. This week I'll have the mayor on again, and I'm curious because I don't know if you caught it on Sunday. You were watching Capital News Sunday, and Robin Voss was on. Mm-hmm. And the idea where he's talking about how he wants these local government officials and municipalities to be innovative. He doesn't want to, you know, just give a little bit more shared revenue. He wants this innovation where you're going to find, somehow this magic bullet to be able to find ways to save money. These municipalities, and that's one of the things I've talked about with people around here, they're cut to the bone. And try to connect statewide issues to local issues. Mm-hmm. And again, I found myself just, again, shaking my head where this man, who is truly the most powerful Republican in Wisconsin, it won't just say there's a problem with shared revenue and let's fix it. No, we got to find innovation in order to make sure that the Uline family gets another huge tax cut out of this, you know, this big surplus.
Exactly. It's very frustrating. It's an excuse. It's a talking point. There isn't. I cannot envision any scenario under which current Republican leadership would say, congratulations, local government. You found this great innovation. Now we're going to finally release the tax dollars that we've owed you for all of these years. It's an endless game. As somebody who covers sports like you do, it's an endless game of moving the goalposts is what it's going to be. And so what I would look forward to is your discussions with Mayor Katie Rosenberg, who has been in and around politics all her life and sees through this immediately. But she could choose the path of, I don't know what you want to call it, you know, bull in a china shop, or just always seeking conflict. She doesn't do that.
No.
She doesn't just roll over and say, okay, Republicans, whatever you want, we'll try our best. She is quite frequently trying to find that middle ground of saying, in so many words, all right, I see your baloney. I recognize your baloney, but we will still make a good faith effort to have a local budget that is efficient as can be, while at the same time noting the many shortcomings that Madison Republicans, you know, owe us.
Absolutely. And again, the last number of budget cycles for local municipalities, not just, you know, the city of Wausau, but the Marathon County Board just recently had to go through this washing machine a month or two ago. I don't understand. I guess I do understand. Whenever I hear Robin Vossen, it was frustrating again. He had to continually mention, boy, I sure wish Tony Evers had not been reelected. Well, we get it, Robin. I mean, he's asked the question, what would you do differently in the last session? Well, I would have had Tony Evers reelected. That was not the point. And
right.
That had nothing to do with what happened in the last session. Again, it's like, stop living in this fantasy world where you have all the power.
Well, the fantasy world is that they treat every year like an even numbered year. And my theory has always been, back when I first ran for legislature, was I said, we need to restore a culture where people in public service recognize that in the odd numbered years, you actually govern. You stop acting like it's an election year, like there's an election around the corner. You actually try to govern. And then in the even numbered years, you make the case over how the way that you governed was good. When you treat it like an endless political cycle where it's always an even numbered year, yeah, you have absolutely no incentive to cooperate at all. And that is the biggest problem with, you know, the current system.
Absolutely. And the thing about it that just has driven me nuts recently is every time we hear they're talking about, we'll talk to the governor. It's like the first time a Democrat gets elected, it doesn't count. Well, now that he's been reelected, well, I guess that means the voters really did elect him. And we see that in so many different ways from the right. They do not accept the fact that they lose an election. They don't want to work together. For 4 years, they've done nothing except try to prove that Tony Evers really wasn't the governor. Went all the way back to the lame duck back in 2018 when they took away power from him and Josh Call. I mean, They don't even hide it anymore, and it's incredibly frustrating. So I am curious to see whether or not they actually try to be a governing coalition within the state Senate and the state assembly and work with the governor to try to get something done in 2023.
Here's the one thing we could offer them to get them to not stretch this out all the way to June 30th. Yeah. And have some kind of a last minute deal. Here's the incentive for them. We remind them that two out of the past 3 years, they gaveled out around early March and took the next 9 months off. We should remind them, hey, if you do that this year, get a budget deal, figure it out by March, you're still going to get paid, but you can have that paid vacation again. Maybe that's the incentive they need.
I think you're being a little overly optimistic there.
it's way overly optimistic, but we're going to follow more of that with Chad Holmes from 2 to 4 on many of these civic media stations. Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
Thank you, Pat.
And please get some rest where you can. That's it for me. You can follow me all day long at Pat Kreitlow up north on Facebook, Pat Kreitlow on Twitter. Coming up next, Earl Ingram in Waukesha and Oshkosh, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Alba for Richland Center, Wausau and Amory, all along the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.